بحلم يا دنيا بلاش تصحيني.
You've been listening to a talk given last week in Olympia, Washington, at an event commemorating the 13th anniversary of the death of peace activist Rachel Corrie. The main speaker was Alice Coy, Rachel's friend, who also witnessed her murder. We also heard Mohammed, a Palestinian from Gaza, and Rachel's mother, Cindy Corrie.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor a performance by Climbing Poetry this Saturday night at the Sungate Studio, 2215 Northeast Alberta. The performance starts at 8 p.m. Climbing Poetry combines dual-voice spoken word poetry, hip-hop, and multimedia theater. They have toured internationally alongside visionary artists and leaders including Angela Davis, Cornel West, Alice Walker, and Naomi Klein. For more than 12 years, their music has been at the forefront of social and environmental justice movements, using their art as a tool for popular education, community organizing, and personal transformation. Again, Climbing Poetry will perform this Saturday night, March 26th at 8 p.m. at the Sungate Studio, 2215 Northeast Alberta in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And that is coming up later on. Right now, it's time for Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Followed at 10:15, a report from our siblings in struggle in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's Flashpoints from the Pacifica Network, produced at KPFA in Berkeley. Keep it locked right here. At KBOO Portland, it's 10:01 a.m.
Cascadia. Today is Friday, March 25th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And weather holding steady for the weekend. I want to just take that up at the end of the program because it ties in with a couple of other stories we have on the environment. What we have actually made of it, the environment and war specifically. I think sometimes we forget what effects these wars we've got burning around the world have done to the environment, and of course the populations that this has harmed. I think probably if one looked at it hard, and again. Am I biased? Hell yes, I'm biased. Everybody knows that. I'm biased on the side of the environment and very solidly against these wars. But taking it all into account. I believe that numbers would show that environmental collapse and the effects of war on the environment have killed more people than the actual war, the wars themselves. So with that in mind, we do have a couple of headlines, and then we're going to speak with Stephen Zunis, Professor of Politics and Chair of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco, and a very frequent guest on Air Cascadia, very, very generous with his time and his intelligence and his humor. The residents across the Atlantic coast got a break and a win last week when President Obama decided not to include the Atlantic coast in his five-year plan for oil and gas development. That's right. And actually, in I believe in Nebraska and Oklahoma, I think, the storage units for putting away oil and gas reserves for a rainy day. They're not going to have a rainy day for a long time, but that's that aside, they have plenty of oil to stay them for a good long time while alternative sources are explored and readied and put into operation. So all of this is moot point. But in the Gulf of Mexico, where companies have been drilling offshore for decades, residents opposed to oil drilling were not so lucky. Hundreds of those residents, along with local and national environmental organizations, rallied at the New Orleans Superdome this week, where the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or the acronym basically is pronounced BOOM, officials were auctioning off, that's right, wait for it, yes, indeed, oil and gas drilling rights on 43 million acres of the Gulf. There are other there's other news. I have been trying all week to find out who is behind the this new organization, the Coalition for a Strong Gorge Economy. This is a recently emerged newborn, wet behind the ears PAC. It was, they filed the papers on March 9th. The PAC appeared just this week, and I called up the treasurer, right? The treasurer has been hired. She's only been on the job for 2 days, and she said she knows nothing about the PAC, even though she's on there. She's one of the signatories to the original application. Usually these people feel strongly about the political action. No, not her. She was hired 2 days ago. Not on the date that her name originally appears on the filing. In other words, when they filed the Coalition for a Strong Gorge Economy opposing Local Water Alliance, right? When they filed that, she must have known nothing about it, even though her name appears on the original papers. Looking at them now, I find her name, I find a number, I call the number, and she knows nothing about this PAC to which she's a signatory weeks ago. She just was hired to do the book. So that said, we're still looking. This is for the funders behind Coalition for a Strong Gorge Economy, obviously Nestle for one, and I wouldn't doubt that the Koch brothers too have a hand in this, certainly an investment. More on that. Everything does tie, right now in the day that we live in, that everything does tie to the environment. So when Hillary Clinton makes pro-environment squawks from time to time, and she does, one might want to remind her that all of these wars that she has been instrumental in pushing, they all have environmental consequences as well as humanitarian consequences. She goes in, guns a-blazing, with pretty much little to no consideration for the effects. Stephen Zunis is joining us today to talk about some of these fiascos Hillary's has got us into. We are fighting, she's fighting wars in our name that she knows so little about, that no consequences whatsoever have been considered. Good morning, Stephen, and we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Thank you.
My pleasure.
So you have written extensively. There's some have followed along behind you, and there is a spirited discussion of Hillary and as Secretary of State, and what did she accomplish? And some of it is very, very dubious. What would a Clinton? What would foreign policy look like under a Clinton presidency?
It would essentially be a return to the Bush-Cheney era. I mean, I think a better look at her foreign policy would be her record as senator, because as Secretary of State, she, in large part, you know, followed the leadership of President Obama. But even there, she did some pretty bad things. I mean, as Secretary of State, for example, she supported the coup in Honduras against the democratically elected President Zelaya. She pushed for the United States to support Morocco's illegal annexation of Western Sahara, a country that it invaded in 1975. Interestingly enough, the mining company that is owned by the Moroccan government that was illegally exploiting the phosphates in the occupied territories was the major funder of the Clinton Global Initiative Conference, which took place in Marrakesh, Morocco, this past year. But going back to her Senate record, she is one of the biggest hawks. She, of course, was a strong proponent of the Iraq War. She was the only Democratic senator who made the ludicrous claim that Iraq was supporting al-Qaeda as a desperate effort to frighten people into supporting that illegal invasion and occupation, even after it was proved that her claims about Iraq having weapons of mass destruction, al-Qaeda ties, were false. She still defended her vote, saying she would have supported invading Iraq anyway.
That's just extraordinary.
Only when she decided she only decided to go up against, come out against the war when she decided to run for president and she saw the polls. She's attacked the International Criminal Court, which is designed to prosecute war criminals, saying we should cut foreign aid to countries that supported. We should not cooperate in any way with the ICC. And not only that, she supported legislation that would authorize the president to use military force to free any U.S. citizen or citizen of an allied country that was held by or behalf of the ICC, of course, leading to serious protests from the Dutch government, concerned about being attacked in The Hague, where the ICC is located. and of course, in Israel-Palestine, she is one of the biggest hawks. Her speech before AIPAC several days ago was just totally off the charts in terms of its support, unconditional support for Netanyahu. People frankly were aghast. Nothing about Palestinian self-determination, nothing about the human rights abuses. Saying it should be, she was attacking Donald Trump from the right. Donald Trump saying, well, in international negotiations, if you're going to be a mediator, you should be neutral. I mean, that's elementary. But she said that we cannot be neutral. We have to support Israel. On everything, despite the fact that Israel is the occupying power,
yes,
has far more power at its disposal, and that's not how a mediator in a peace talk should operate. And she even defended war crimes. Israel bombed that UN school last year. Bernie Sanders, the Obama administration, et cetera, condemned it. But she said, they had a right to do that. It was self-defense. Hamas was firing rockets from there, even though they were not. It was demonstrated there was no military activity anywhere close. And she said, well, it's Hamas's fault anyway because they started it, basically giving Israel a blank check to kill as many people as they wanted. Indeed, over 1,200 civilians died during, 500 of them children, during that these weeks of Israeli assault. So she really is quite extreme. She's attacked the International Court of Justice for saying that while Israel could build its separation barrier on its internationally recognized border, could not build it in a serpentine fashion in the occupied West Bank as a land grab to incorporate these illegal settlements. Well, she said, the World Court is anti-Israel and says, and they're not supporting Israel's right to self-defense, essentially identifying the settlements as part of Israel. In fact, she's even done photo ops at these illegal Israeli settlements, you know, defending these illegal activities and the incredible devastation on the Palestinians by building this illegal separation wall. So, again, and this is not just a pander to the Jewish vote. Polls show the vast majority of American Jews do not see the West Bank as part of Israel as she does. They take much more moderate positions in AIPAC. And again, it's quite consistent with her support for Iraq, her support for the Moroccan occupation, her support for the Honduras coup, not to mention her backing of various Arab dictators and dictators around the world. Her attacks on the United Nations, she's spoken at right-wing rallies outside the UN, you know, protesting their idea that the United States and its allies should be subjected to international law just like everybody else. I mean, yeah, frankly, I'm disappointed Bernie Sanders has not called her out on more of these kinds of things. But the fact is that she is very much of a hawk, and we would be very, very dangerous if she became the commander-in-chief.
It already is, because the animosity towards the United States emanating all around the world has had effects. We're seeing them all the time, I think. We are completely out of time. What I did want to ask you, and we'll take this up next week, is where do these views come from? Because I think to understand that is key to understanding, again, what her presidency would look like, because this does